906 at the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. It is John Flood and Friends, and every Thursday we bring in the Lawrence Business Magazine and have fun with them for the full hour. And as always, here she is. It is Ann Frame Herzog. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, John. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for coming in again today.
Our pleasure. Well, today I'm here with Jeremy Farmer from Just Foods. Hey, Jeremy.
Good morning, Ann. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. So you've had a busy year. You started here in, when, July?
July of last year. Yeah, so 11 months. July 5th was my first day and was able to go out on the lake and well, not on the lake, downtown and watch, the, I guess, the river, watch the fireworks. And then we got to work on the next day on July 5th. And so it's pretty. It's been a pretty whirlwind of an 11 months, but it's been a lot of fun, too.
Well, that's good, because I'm obviously not well-versed, but you've had so far, so you start in July, you've got a new building, you've changed the structure of the company, you, from what I understand, from what, when we profiled you last December, when we talked about you in a magazine in December, you were saying how many, just the amount that you'd increase and how many families you're feeding. So let's just kind of, how did that year evolve? I mean, what was it like coming into Just Foods, and what was your background before you got here?
Well, you know, I guess I'll start with my background. There was native Lawrencian. Mm-hmm. Of course, I graduated from Lawrence High in 2001, and I've been working with nonprofits for ever since that time. Really passionate about helping people and having compassion for where they're at in their lives. And the biggest thing was, nothing, as much preparation as you can have, nothing can prepare you for things that you haven't experienced before. And so that's really where we were at. I mean, we were, you know, we came in here last July, and, you know, my sister-in-law was the one who gave me information about this particular job. She sent me an email and she said, "Are you interested in working with a food bank up here in Lawrence?" And of course, my first thought was, gosh, to move back home. You know, I'd always told myself that wouldn't be my story, not because I don't love Lawrence, but just because it's the stereotypical, like, that's what you're supposed to do. And, yeah. And I guess, you know, if that's what you're supposed to do, then that, you know, the non-conforming side of me said, I don't want to do that. And so, so I applied for the job and was working in Arkansas at Project Hope Food Bank as the director of community and agency relations. And this was kind of the next step if I wanted to continue to work for nonprofits, was to go from being a director of a program of sorts to being in charge of the program itself. Mm-hmm. And so I applied for the job and ended up getting it and met a lot of great people along the way. And I was researching, Just Food and what it was in the community, I started looking at the newspaper and what I saw was, in February, so 5 months before, and of course, mm-hmm. most job and employers in the time that you're applying before they call you back don't give you an opportunity to ask a ton of questions. Uh-huh. So I was reading all these articles about how 5 months ago it was going to close. We're talking about February of 2011. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of got like, wow, I've had experience working in nonprofits, but this is going to be brand new. Mm-hmm. I've never had an experience like that before. And of course, the Lawrence community stepped up and KLWN's Hank Booth, and I'm sure there were a lot of people on board with that, and so we're grateful that the community stepped up to help. But we got here last July, and really what this organization, I think, needed more than anything else is an advocate and a cheerleader. You know, I tell people that I'm not a typical director of an agency. What I do the most is tell stories, and I cheerlead people. And so those are my two primary goals. And if I can do that effectively, I mean, I think that's what people needed. People didn't have anybody who was here before who would stand in the gap and who would be their support system and their backbone. And the first day I came in, I said, guys, we're going to change the culture of this organization, and we're going to make it great. And it's going to be one of the premier ones in Douglas County, and we're going to have a blast doing it. And oh, by the way, I'm for you. And that just did wonders for creating that culture of trust with the volunteers in the organization and with the staff. And it's been a great, you know, it's been a great 11 months since. As far as moving into the new building, we were operating two relatively large programs last fall out of one building. We had a 3,600 square foot warehouse. And
okay, what were those programs?
Well, those programs were, we kind of break everything down into two divisions, and this is kind of new for the community because we haven't officially rolled it out yet. But our client services division is what we do directly for low income clients, and so people that are in need of food assistance who come in. Before, when I would go and speak places, I would try to do what, you know, Jim Carrey did on Ace Ventura, and I would take the big deep breath and we have our food pantry and our mobile food pantry and our commodities, and we have our, you know, all the programs that we have, and then how many people we serve through each. But it just made sense to kind of put them all under one. So our client services division is when we provide food to clients who are in need of food assistance. And we serve, in May, we served about 6,800 people through that client services division. And that's people walking through the door. And what most people don't realize is 40% of those were under the age of 18. And so we just finished up the summer of service with the Roger Hill Volunteer Center, a great program, great summer program here in the community. And you know, I was talking to them yesterday, and I said 40% of those 6,800 people are kids your age. And it was just kind of humbling for them to just sit there and go, I mean, there are people that I go to school with, you know,
right,
one out of every two, basically, who are in need of food. And it's just mind-boggling, and I'm a numbers and stats person. I love looking at them because they tell a story. And so our client services is what we do for clients, and then our partner services is probably one of my favorite programs. And that is, we go out in the community and we do food drives, and we raise awareness in the community to open up doors. And then we provide that food to various agencies around the community. And right now we're serving about 37 agencies. And let me tell you,
37.
You know, 37,
wow.
Yeah, 37 food assistance agencies. And those are food pantries and feeding programs and residential programs and soup kitchens and homeless shelters. And, well, homeless shelter, the Lawrence Community Shelter, great organization. But, you know, what we strive to do with this is we use all of our resources to go out. We did the Stamp Out Hunger food drive with the National Association of Letter Carriers on May the 12th. And we had to rent a U-Haul truck to back it up to the letter carrier station. And then we had three vehicles, including our van, that were over at the Jayhawk station at 31st in Iowa. And so we had cost from that food drive of about $1,000. We incur those costs of gas, of, you know, transporting, sorting, storing, casing the food, and then distributing it out to these agencies, because they're operating on with very, very limited resources. They want to feed people. They have really huge hearts and really small pocketbooks. And so we want to help them stretch their dollars further by providing them with donated food. In addition to that, we raise awareness in the community about things like that by talking to folks like you on radio programs like this. Mm-hmm. And last week, Hillary Brown from Hillary's Eat Well came and Local Burger.
Right.
She's the president and founder of Local Burger. Found one of our volunteers at the Merck two Saturdays ago and said, you know, we have some veggie burgers that are sitting in a cold storage facility in Kansas City. There's about 86,000 patties, and we want to donate them to Just Food. And so we're the recipients, or we're going to be going and picking up.
Those veggie burgers are actually really good.
Yeah, they're great. And you know what? Honestly, you can't even tell the difference
really
between,
good.
You know, and I'm a meat connoisseur. Like I'm the guy that's going to be able to tell the difference between what's real and what's not. And but these you can't at all. And so we're really grateful for that partnership. And that's more food that we can get in the hands of our partner agencies, so that they don't have to go to the store, or they don't have to, you know, through wholesale relationships that we have, buy meat, so they can stretch their dollars further to feed more people. And that ultimately is the goal of that partner services division.
That's great. So what I think is interesting, when you're talking about the business, you know, how, I mean, because obviously, you know, the business was going under before you got here, and they needed to find some funding and stuff. So where all does your funding come from?
Well, we write some grants. We've got some great funding partners. The United Way is one of our funding partners, and we're very grateful for what they've done. The Douglas County Community Foundation as well. We actually just received a grant for $25,000 from the Kansas Health Foundation for our community health education and nutrition classes. And that is going to create some buzz in this community. We've got chefs from various restaurants in the community that are going to be coming together and that are going to be teaching people how to cook food. And we're going to have three different tiers. And the goal of the grant is not only to help run the program, but we're actually going to be providing these low-income clients with pots and pans and utensils for when they graduate the class.
Oh, that's wonderful.
A lot of them are going to come and you know, they're going to say, this is great. I don't have a soup pan. I don't have a spatula at my house. These are things that we're going to show them. And I've been to the cooking classes at the Merck, and I'm just fascinated by what they're able to do. And then the next thought that goes through my mind is, well, I'm going to have to go out and spend $150 on all these cool utensils because I don't have any of them at my house. And so that's what the point of the grant is. So grants, we partner with, we just became our own 501c3 organization.
Yeah, I totally wanted to talk to you about
and
that.
So, but ECANN is still a funding partner of ours. They've committed $30,000 through March 31st of 2013, which is incredible. And so, and the rest of it's community donations. The rest of it is the community hearing about what we're doing and stepping up and supporting us. And we have such a faithful, generous base of donors who constantly support us. We've got some fundraisers coming up. We've got a golf tournament coming up in September. We're the recipients of the Rev It Up Hot Rod Hullabaloo, which is going to be Saturday, August the 11th. We're partnering with Steve and Michelle Chronister and Be Your Best Self Incorporated. And last year, you know, we're expecting this year to raise between $10,000 and $15,000. And awesome. So they're partnering with the Elvis Parade that's going to be happening on that day, which is going to be really neat.
Elvis Parade. Have we had an Elvis Parade? Is this a new thing?
I don't think so. It's going to be that. It's going to be an Elvis Parade, and then it's going to be a car show that's going to happen downtown. And then there's going to be a pub crawl later that evening. And so we're really excited about bringing people into downtown and bringing some business to downtown for something that isn't, you know, typical. And that's the whole thing about, you know, with what we do in feeding people, it helps organizations downtown and in the community to be attached to what we're doing, because people see that. And it's just the nature of people to think, you know, if I'm attached to that organization, then maybe I'll go support that business as well. And so, you know, that is how we, in a sense, can give back to the business community. And it's really exciting to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's how we're community supported. Every dollar comes in from, you know, that comes in from Douglas County stays in Douglas County. And we serve only people from Douglas County. And we're very, very, very strict about that. Not because there aren't people in other communities that need food, but because the need is so great here. And I'm all for our community taking care of people in our community. The need's great across around the world, but the need's just as great across the street.
Yeah, and if we have to take care of the people here. That's what I find fascinating, too, when you're talking about 6,800 people you served in May alone. And you talk about, you know, so you're serving people in Douglas County. What other criteria do you have for the people that come that need food? Do you have other bars or guidelines that you do in serving people?
Well, we try to make it as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, for our client services division, we've got various programs, some of which have income requirements, some of which don't. But all of them require that you have to be a resident of Douglas County.
Okay.
And that is because, you know, when I'm talking to folks and when I'm approaching folks like you saying, hey, you really need to give to this program, it's worthwhile. People in our community, Lawrence is a cool place. Douglas County is a great place to live, but people here want to know that what they're going to be giving and donating is going to stay here to feed people that are in their neighborhoods, that are at their schools, that go to school with their kids and grandkids. Mm-hmm. And we have a deep-rooted respect for that. And so that is the underlying requirement that we have for everybody, mm-hmm. is that they have to be a resident of Douglas County. Most of the time, we don't have any requirements for our programs, like our mobile food pantry. We don't have requirements. Our nutrition classes, you could come and take the nutrition classes if you want to. Now, you're going to have to qualify to receive the pots and pans.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But anybody can come to these nutrition classes, and they're going to be free. So we want to get people in the same room that are people from the community, but also our clients, because we want to create awareness as to what the need is. And then in addition to that, our food pantry has a requirement that you have to be within 185% of the federal poverty level.
Now, what's that mean?
Basically, it means for a household size of one, you've got to make, if you make over like $12.75 an hour, you don't qualify.
Okay.
It's a very, very loose, you know, and we don't make people bring in pay stubs or anything like that. We have two commodity programs that are regulated by the state, and those are a little bit more strict. But for our on-site programs, for our food pantry and so forth, we don't have any requirements that you know, people have to bring in their income or anything like that. And we do that because, you know, if you're at a point where you need food enough to come in to a food pantry, drive in, walk in the door, fill out the application, that is in and of itself sometimes humiliating enough. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to make that process hard for people. We want to make it very easy for people to be able to do that. And it's just very, very, you know, we want to make it easy for people. Mm-hmm. We respect the dignity of every person that walks through the door. And part of that is making it easy for them to access nutritious food here in Douglas County.
That's wonderful.
You're listening to the Lawrence Business Magazine show right here on the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. We'll continue with Ann Frame Herzog from the Lawrence Business Magazine and Jeremy Farmer from Just Food next right here on 1320 KLWN. News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. It is 925. Sunshine today, high about 88. Should be near 90 Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Monday night, chance for some rain and maybe thunderstorms. On John Flood and Friends, let's return to the Lawrence Business Magazine show. And here is your host, Ann Frame Herzog.
Thank you. I'm here with Jeremy Farmer of Just Foods. And we were talking a little bit about how the way your programs work, and you mentioned that you guys are now your own 501c3. What does that mean, and how does that work for you guys?
Well, you know, we began evaluating the program, and, mm-hmm. and when I got here last July, one of the big things that we got from talking to people was the goal from the beginning. You know, this started in really about the time I graduated from high school here, and that is so neat to be a part of a program. Our founder, Ann Weick, who was the former dean of the School of Social Welfare at KU, got together with a bunch of people, and she said, it is unjust that people don't have access to food in Douglas County. And what can we do about it? And so she went to Ottawa and pitched this idea around 2008 to ECAN, and Richard Jackson's the chief executive officer over there, and really just asked them to make an investment with the government's Economic Recovery Act funds, the ARRA funds that became available. And ECAN thought it was a worthwhile program. And basically what Ann said is, we don't have any space, we don't have any administration, we don't really have anything, so you guys are going to have to make all of that happen. And Richard thought it was a worthwhile investment, and the board of ECAN. And so they made a $250,000 investment with the hope that, you know, ECAN's a community action agency, and what that means is that they go into communities, they sink a lot of money into programs that sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. When they work and a community says, yes, we want to support this, the goal of those programs is to be independent and supported wholly by the community.
Okay.
And so, but conversely, sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes communities don't want it or won't support it. And so in those cases, then that's written off as a loss and a good investment of however many years it was or months. But that wasn't the case with this program. And so the goal from the beginning was for us to be our own independent agency, operated and managed and led and supported by people in Douglas County. And this was just the culmination of that, with the community reaching a point where we had gotten a lot of support. We had an open house back in April. And we had 250 people at our open house, just a huge community supported event. And that was really kind of the point where I think a lot of people realized this is a legitimate possibility for this to be a mover and a shaker, not only in Douglas County, but for the region. And I don't mean that we're going to serve more of the region, but we're coming up with a business model right now that we're going to be able to take to various counties to say, this is how we've done it. This is how we've been successful. We've decentralized the model of food distribution and empowered local agencies to distribute more food to people, and not only distributing food, but teaching people what to do with their food. And we've seen that be wildly successful. And so we're putting together this business model, this business plan that we're going to go and pitch to other counties to say, this is how you can get more food to agencies and to people. And mm-hmm. I think it's going to be great. But we just, June 1st, actually, at 4:01 p.m., my employment with ECAN ended. And then June 2nd at 12:01 a.m. So there was a time period for about 8 hours where I was unemployed.
Wow.
And interestingly enough,
were you covered by insurance? And
Yeah, we were still good. There was gap coverage there and so forth. But the funny part about it was, is I put it on Facebook and I said, you know, I'm unemployed, and a lot of people didn't understand it. But that is the most clicked on and responsive thing that I've had on Facebook since I opened my Facebook account, was people liking that I was unemployed. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about that, but nonetheless. So yeah, we became our own 501c3, but that was the goal from the beginning. And you know, it's going to let Douglas County know that we are wholly supported by them now. We're so grateful for what Ecan has done for us since we opened in 2009. And without that investment that you know, of $250,000 that they made, we wouldn't be here. But an even greater investment is what Douglas County has invested in us. And our advisory board, now board of directors, all of the volunteers, you know, there are two full-time employees at Just Food, myself and a warehouse manager, director of operations. We're kind of shifting his title with the new way that we're kind of organizing things. But so those are the only two full-time staff. We have no part-time staff, and everybody else is volunteer. And so
that's pretty incredible.
Well, really. It is. And you know, here's the thing. I mean, I get asked this all the time. So how does that work? And my answer is, I don't know. We create a culture where volunteers can thrive and feel welcome. People want a place to belong. More than anything else, the core of who we are is you're not going to get volunteers to stick around if they don't feel like they're not a part of something.
True.
And our volunteers feel like they're a part of something. Mm-hmm. We give them titles. We give them responsibilities. We let them know that we would not function. We could not function without them. And it's the same thing that we do with the paid staff person. Do we have control over them? No. Can they leave whenever they want? Yes. You know, do they have to fill out a time off request when they're going to take vacation like we do? No, they don't. But they're so committed and dedicated to the organization. It's unbelievable to see the support that has been garnered from different volunteers. And the great part about it is that as of recently, we've had a lot of clients that have started to become volunteers as well. And that's been very exciting.
That's pretty exciting. Well, speaking of Facebook, I have read on your Facebook a few times about been really interesting about some people that you have, like you were saying, you're helping people when they're in need and then coming back later and giving back to the organization. Can you tell me a story?
Yeah, there's a lot of stories. You know, the interesting part about these things are there's two camps of people. The first camp of people is the people who were once donors, mm-hmm. who are now receivers of service. Because the economy has affected people in such a way where
it's been scary.
Yeah, where people, you know, whether they gave $10 a month or whether they gave $100 a month or whether they gave more, you know, they were giving regularly to Just Food, and then something happens, life happens, you know, the mm-hmm. economy happens. They lose their job, their hours get cut, their kid gets sick. I've often said that most of us are one illness, accident, or pink slip away from needing some social services here in our community. And it's so close, we don't think about it. It affects us when it's somebody close to us mm-hmm. because we have to face it then. We have to think about it.
Right.
But most of the time we don't. So that's one camp of people who used to be donors who are now receivers of service. But the other camp is people who are receivers of service who become donors.
Mm-hmm.
And those stories are really, they're the happier stories than
yeah.
the people who used to give and now mm-hmm. can't. But you know, interestingly enough, there are so many people who are so generous. There was a lady, she's a retired social worker. Her and her husband live over in East Lawrence. They're great people, and we love them to death. And she's on oxygen dealing with lung cancer and emphysema and so forth. And she would always come in and she would say, you know, when I have the opportunity, if I have anything left over at the end of the month, mm-hmm. we're gonna give back. Yeah. And you know, the crazy part that people don't understand is our system is structured in such a broken way where, you know, a married couple receiving Social Security, if they don't have any retirement benefits or if those have been exhausted in many people's cases, and especially like theirs paying for medical bills and hospital visits mm-hmm. and so forth, you know, a married couple on Social Security is going to make $1,200 combined
yeah.
total. But a lot of what we're seeing is a lot of older folks, they're actually getting divorced and still living together because if they're divorced, they can make $1,200 individually. So they can yeah. double what they're making. We've seen couples that are married 60 years who get divorced and we're going, do you hate each other? No, we just get more money from, you know, we get more in Social Security.
Right. They've invested all that in Social Security.
Absolutely.
Now they need it to survive.
Absolutely. And they can't get access to it. And that's, you know, that stinks right there. That is what to me is a very broken system. But she kept saying, but she's still married to her husband and that hasn't been her story. And, you know, so she said, if we ever had anything left over at the end of the month, we're going to give back. We're going to give back. And so she would say that almost every time she would come in. And one day she walked in and one of our volunteers comes back to my office and she's got tears in her eyes. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, this lady is here and wants to talk to you. I think she has a donation. And I knew instinctively what it was and what was happening. And so we all kind of congregated in my office, and we just had this beautiful moment of sharing, you know, this is how it's supposed to be. The perception is, you know, I wrote a series of blogs for Well Commons a few weeks ago that low-income people, you know, are they lazy? You know, are they intolerant? Are they generous? Are they grateful? And the perception is that they are lazy. And you know, I tell people this when I'm talking to folks all the time. We think low-income people are lazy and stupid and can't get off the couch and get a job. That's not most of their stories. The face of hunger in Douglas County isn't the perpetual mother who's been on welfare, you know, since her mom was, you know, 20 and she was 12. Mm-hmm. It's a married family of five where, and this is one of the stories as well, where, you know, they're giving to a place like ours. And the mother just got promoted in a job in Johnson County, was making $30,000 a year as an office assistant, got promoted to office manager, and was making $70,000 a year. And so that's a pretty big jump up in pay. So they did what they needed to do to, you know, make things last for the next 10 to 12 years. They had an old van that they were investing a lot of money in to try to keep running. Mm-hmm. They wanted to refinance their house to kind of give them a little bit more space with their three kids. And then 2 months after they made those decisions, she lost her job. Yeah. And so now they have, you know, $150,000 house debt on a house that they could only sell for $120,000. And they have a $30,000 car note for a car that they can only sell for $18,000. So the logic part of people says, well, just sell the house and sell the car. Well, you can't really do it because you're going to be upside down in them by $30,000 or $40,000.
Right.
So what do you do? Well, you got to make ends meet somehow.
Mm-hmm. And you have to live.
Absolutely. You have to live.
You want to put a roof over your head for your kids.
Absolutely. And food on their plates. And so that's their story. And there's so many like it. That's the face of hunger in this community. It's people. If somebody was just able to like just watch the people that were to come in each and every day, it's not the people that you think it is. Mm-hmm. It's not the people that why can't they just get a job? It's not those people at all. Mm-hmm. It's people just like you and I who are working their tails off. We have clients who work three jobs, you know, making minimum wage, 60 to 70 hours a week, leaving their two kids ages 9 and 5 at home. And you know, that they're doing it because they can't afford a babysitter. So it's something that we really have to keep our minds aware of, and you know, it's not what we think it is, but we're here for people like that, and we're so grateful. Our clients have been volunteering, our clients have been giving, our volunteer classes, our clients outnumber our non-clients 2-to-1, and it's so great. Our clients walk in, and the first thing they say is, God, you guys did this for us. You moved into this new building for us, and for them to feel like they're treated with dignity and respect despite just what is them going through probably hell, you know, through these tumultuous times is exactly what we're looking for. And so we want to do that and treat them with dignity, because it could be us. It could be you. It could be me. And I would hope that if I was ever in that position, that somebody on a radio show would be advocating on my behalf to treat me with dignity and respect. And that's what we strive to do.
And you're putting a new face on hunger.
Absolutely. Yeah. It could be anybody.
You are listening to the Lawrence Business Magazine show. This week, Ann Frame Herzog from the Lawrence Business Magazine has as a guest Jeremy Farmer from Just Food. It'll continue right after this on the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. 9:41 at the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN, high near 88 today, 90 on Friday with plenty of sunshine. Now on 1320 KLWN, on Thursday mornings in the 9 o'clock hour, it's the Lawrence Business Magazine show. And here is your host, Ann Frame Herzog.
Thanks. I'm here with Jeremy Farmer of Just Foods. And we were talking, he's putting, a new face on hunger here in Douglas County, just how we see the people in need. And one of the things you were talking about earlier is the percentage of people that you serve that are under 18 in families and stuff. What was the percentage again?
Well, it's 40%. The two stats that are the most scary to me, and you know, I'm a numbers person, and I tell people this all the time when different people want to talk about, you know, how we're able to so effectively tell stories. Numbers are a part of that. You've got stories and you've got faces, but in order to do that, you've got to figure out, you know, why those people have those stories, and numbers tell those stories. And so we very meticulously track numbers, and we've got a great volunteer who does that for us. And she puts together a huge packet of statistics every month that we look at, and we look at trends, and, you know, we look at the trends of of what happens with the summertime, and does the need typically go up or down because kids are out of school, and everybody thinks that it would typically go up, but it actually goes down in the summertime. And there's really no rhyme or reason for it. This year it's going up. We served more people in May than we've ever served before.
Wow.
And June, we've been busier the first week of June. The people that we've served in the first week of June have mirrored the fourth week of the month when everybody's money runs out and they come and they need services. And so, you know, it's so, you know, just the time when you think you've got it figured out, something else changes and it's different. But we served from 2010 to 2011. We saw a 51% increase in the number of kids that we served in 2011 from 2010.
Wow.
And a 78% increase in the number of senior citizens over the age of 60 that we served in 2011 than we had in 2010. And the interesting part about it is that the current economic conditions are hitting young families with children and senior citizens on fixed income. And we know that because we see, that's why we see 40% of the people coming in that are under the age of 18. And that's scary. I mean, that is just, you know, you think about that. Think about the number of 6,800 people are coming in. 40% of them are under the age of 18. You think about the number of children that are affected, and that's heartbreaking to hear. And so we very meticulously track those. There are kids who come in who, you know, one kid who said that he hadn't eaten a meal in 3 days.
Oh, gosh.
And it's like, I mean,
it's heartbreaking.
It is. And you know, now that school's out, that's going to be people's stories. And and so, you know, we're really trying hard to make sure that people know where to go to get food. And because it's so important now, we don't want kids to eat. The school district does such a great job on the free and reduced lunch programs, you know, but at the same time, I mean, I can't imagine being a kid and not being able to afford food. I mean, that's something that, you know, at school, how is that going to make that person feel? We've done a lot of research on the effects of hunger, and most people think hunger, you know, you think about somebody not having food and you think about the Sarah McLachlan commercial holding, you know, the child from Africa that you can see his ribs and the sad music is playing and she's saying, you know, please sponsor a child to not go hungry. And that's what we think it is. But
it is, and that's sad.
Yeah, it is. But it's not you know, it's not really that way here. It's not that people don't have access to food. Most of the time, it's that they don't have access to the right food.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a conference up on KU's campus, and somebody made a statement, and they said, well, you know, because of the obesity rate being so high in Douglas County, hunger's not a problem. And I just, like, I was sitting there and getting fidgety. And, you know, I was shaking and I was trying so hard to just wait my turn and not just, you know, go, what is your problem? You don't know what you're talking about. Because when you go to the store, what are the cheapest things to buy? It's not the fresh produce.
Sugar.
It's sugar and it's carb-laden foods and it's the shells and cheese with 1,200 calories that are on sale for 99 cents. And that's what people buy. Because when they go to the store, they don't, you know, you and I may go to the store and we may go, we don't really have a budget. We're just going to get whatever we want to feed us for kind of however long.
Right.
But most people go, I have $3 on my vision card and $2.15 worth of change in my purse. And I have to figure out a way to buy baby formula Similac for my baby who's allergic to anything else but soy and myself and my five-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And so who gets the food? Is it the mother and the five-year-old or is it the baby? Because you've got $5. Most of the time, it's you buy four things of macaroni and cheese, you keep a dollar around to last you until payday, and so you start feeding this six-month-old child shells and cheese. Well, you're setting it up on this cycle, this six-month-old child, you know, they don't have any teeth, they can't chew things, but, you know, you can just let them suck the cheese off of your fingers, so to speak. And so, well, guess what? This child is being set up at the age of 6 months for a lifetime of obesity, all because his mom couldn't afford food. Or his dad couldn't afford food. And that's the cycle that we see so many times. And what people don't understand from a business perspective, Ann, is that this has economic implications on a community.
Yes.
If we don't take care of this problem and we don't address this issue and we don't make sure that people have access to the right food, it has economic implications on a community. You think about a kid who grows up not having the right food. The research tells us that they will not be able to pay attention in school, that they will be perpetually made fun of by kids their own age, that they will eventually be obese, that their likelihood for graduating high school is significantly lower, and because they don't have a high school diploma, they'll have to get a GED or settle with not having a GED, which means that they're always going to be in the system, so to speak. They're always going to be on Medicaid, and you and I will always be paying for their health care and for them to continue to live. And we think about that and we go, man, that's an injustice. It doesn't have to be if we make sure that they have access to the right stuff and the right food to put in their system and to give to their families. And that's why I'm so passionate about this. This has implications that far stretch beyond it's unjust for somebody not to have food on their plate. I believe that if we start taking care of people and making sure that they have food, that we'll see an effect in the unemployment rate within our community. We'll
start
see
to an stop,
absolutely.
Break the cycle.
We've got to break it somewhere, and what better place to break it than to make sure that people have the right food? I mean, when I was growing up, I would go take, you know, a test the next day, and you know, what would my mom always tell me the night before? Make sure you get plenty of rest and eat a good breakfast.
Yeah.
And so but there are a lot of kids that don't have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
There are kids in our Lawrence School District that are homeless, you know, and so
surprising amount, actually.
Absolutely. And they're not getting a good night's rest and they're not getting a breakfast. And so how can we expect them to be successful in school?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're not, you know, we go, oh, well, there's something. No, it's because they don't have access to what you and I have access to so that we can get up and function.
And what
in the
we
mornings.
Take for granted.
Absolutely. Very much so. So it has economic implications. And we're going to be doing a series of articles with the Lawrence Journal World. And Carrie Britt's going to be helping us out with that on the effects of hunger and telling the story in various different ways. And it's going to be a very, very eye-opening thing, I'm quite certain, for a lot of people in the community to talk about the economic development implications of somebody who doesn't have access to the right food. And so.
Well, when you're talking about the economic development implications, too, then that's something, too, I know that you've been an advocate, too, is in not only in order to help the people when you try to deal with people on a temporary basis because you want them not to need your services.
Right.
And that also a lot of the people are there because that somebody's lost a job. They're dealing with a crisis. So a lot of one of the things you were saying, I know, is like, getting jobs, economic development, making sure that people can have jobs, making sure people can do those jobs. What are you, I guess this is just preaching here, but what are those, what kind of jobs are most of these people looking for that you deal with? Is there something specific they want or do you think that they need?
Well, I think, you know, 60% of Douglas County, which is the equivalent of 68,000 people, are at or below 185% of the federal poverty level. 68,000 people in our county are basically at risk for hunger and would qualify for our services. 25% of our county is making $60,000 or more per year, and we have a middle class of 15%. So we have a lot of people that make less than $20,000 a year, 60%. We have 25% that make more than $60,000. We really don't have a middle class here. And that's the thing that the economy has done is it's really just dried up and shrunk the middle class. And and that's why I'm a proponent of economic development in our community, because we need more jobs like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for Lowe's coming. I'm all for Olive Garden coming. I'm all for those places coming because they're going to give people something.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really would like to see is more of the industrial, more of the you know, specialized type jobs, because it's going to help us rebuild our middle class. We have a lot of people who make $20,000 a year. We got a lot of people who make over 60. We don't have a lot of people right there in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the other communities around us are offering, are people who can make that amount of money, because it's hard to live on 20 and you can live comfortably on 60. But 40 is really, I think, a good, you know,
you can feed a family.
Yeah, you can feed a family there. Absolutely. And so that's why I've been a huge proponent of economic development within the community and getting the right jobs. And you asked what the right jobs are. I mean, I think for everybody, it's going to be different. There are a lot of people that are skilled in a lot of different ways. And, you know, they need an opportunity. But in order for them to have that opportunity, they need to be able to eat a good meal. They need to be able to have vegetables in their diet. Hunger in this community is not, you know, people not having access to any food, although that is some people's story.
Right.
It's that they don't have access to the right food. It's the lady down in Baldwin City who hadn't eaten meat for 2 months because she didn't, you know, she couldn't afford it. You know, it's the people who haven't had fresh vegetables or who haven't had fruit in their diet, or, you know, and we think about that and we go, really, is that, that kind of seems far-fetched, but it's the reality. Mm-hmm. It's true. It's where people are. It's not that they don't have access to food. It's that they don't have access to the right food. And that's right along with the health department's initiative of access to nutritious food, which
nutritious
is
food.
What we're about.
Cut down on obesity, make sure people have healthy foods and healthy minds that way, too.
Absolutely.
Help the kids.
The conversation will continue here on the Lawrence Business Magazine show. This is the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN, 955, continuing with the Lawrence Business Magazine show. And here's your host, Stan Frame Herzog.
I'm here with Jeremy Farmer of Just Foods. And when you were talking to us about how in June you had more people coming at the first week than you've expected. Now, how do you deal with that kind of demand, with this kind of, amping up of demand, having more people than you expect? How do you guys deal with that?
Well, to give you an example, I mean, we weren't open on Wednesdays in our old facility, and mm-hmm. we moved into our new facility in April, and we started being open on Wednesdays because Wednesdays were the day in our old facility that we served partners through our partner services division. And so we opened up on Wednesdays, and Wednesdays are really slow. We have between 7 and 10 families. Yesterday, we had like 70 families.
Wow.
On a day when we weren't normally open, and it's the first week of the month, and we normally don't see those numbers until the last week of the month. And so we're sitting there going, gosh, we got to figure out what to do. We got to do something. And so, mm-hmm. We've tried to ramp up our community support and letting folks mm-hmm. know what it is that we're doing and coming on shows like this. And, you know, people can get involved in a lot of ways. You know, the number one thing that you talk to nonprofits that you say, how can I get involved and how can I help? People say, well, get out your checkbook and go right to this website, write me a
and
check.
It does help.
It does help. But I think more importantly, you know, I try to ask people to advocate for us more than I ask people to give us money. And here's a great example why. One of the great supporters of Just Food has been Hank Booth. Mm-hmm. And, Hank's asked, what can we do to help? What can we do to help? Hank, advocate for us. You know, tell our story wherever right. you go. And Hank was on the Not So Late show the other night with Mike right. Anderson. And he said, you know, I get to tell the great story of so many wonderful nonprofits in the community like Just Food. And that was huge because there were a lot of people that like that show and that watch that show. And as soon as Hank makes that identification point with Just Food, there are people who will get out their checks and write a check or mm-hmm. checkbook and write a check, who will go online and make a donation just because Hank Booth identifies himself with our organization. And so that's what people can do more than anything is advocate for our cause mm-hmm. and tell the Just Food story. You know, tell it at your office where you work. Tell it to your friends and family. If you guys that are listening want to do food drives, want to do things for us, do them in that respect. But, you know, we'll always take money. We'll always take volunteers. Those are the things that any nonprofit that you would talk to would need and would need a lot of. But at the same time, we need folks to advocate for us. We need folks all over Douglas County to tell our story. We need folks to tell folks that there's a place to go if you don't have access to food. Conversely, we need people to tell agencies that are serving people, soup kitchens, homeless shelters, residential programs. If they're not one of our partner agencies and getting food from us that's free, they need to come down and start getting right. food that's free from us. So that's how people can I would say, help the most.
Well, they can probably, you have a website that they can go to?
Yeah, justfoodks.org. And there you can volunteer, you can donate money, you can donate food, you can get information on our partner agencies, you can read more about the Just Food story, see about all the great partners that we have in the community. We just rebuilt our website. So from a business perspective, it's on the WordPress platform, and we wanted it to be interactive and for people to be able to get information about what it is that we do in the community. We're really excited about that.
That's great. What I wanted to do is we're going to be here. You can also get a link to that from our site, thelordsbusinessmagazine.com.
Great.
We also have a link for there. And we also follow us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. And we're here every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. talking to people and having conversations with people like Jeremy, who we've talked about in our magazine and profiled, and just having a little bit more of an in-depth conversation, a follow-up, and talking about these things and trying to redefine kind of the concept of business. Running a nonprofit is an interesting business, and this has been great, Jeremy. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Ann, for having us.
Take care.
Thanks to Ann Frame Herzog and also Jeremy Farmer here on the Lawrence Business Magazine show. It's now 10 o'clock, and this is KLWN Lawrence.